Well, national championship weekend, I suppose weekend's probably the better way to put it, is here. We're going to be joined now by FCS Nation host Kevin Marshall. It's the granddaddy of them all for FCS football, the national championship. It's moved to Nashville this year, and we have the two most likely suspects, two-seeded Montana State and unseeded Illinois State, who's won, what, basically half a dozen road ball games over the last 2 months at this point. Kind of crazy to think about. Kevin, how did we get here, and how much did you expect these two teams to be the ones to meet up in Nashville?
Well, the granddaddy of them all, I mean, that's the military classic of the South. I think we all know that. You know, you can call them the national championship game whatever you like, but it certainly isn't that. But look, if you had Montana State in the title game, I'll believe you. I'll believe you if that's what your bracket said. But if you had Illinois State, you're just the worst type of liar. You know, like the one that would lie to your mama's face even. So Brock Spack's done one hell of a job to get his team into this type of a position. He said before the season started he thought they were going to be a really good football team. It just took them some time to get it together. And, you know, after the senior day loss to Southern Illinois where they got run out of their stadium, nobody had them getting this far in the playoffs, and a lot of people didn't even have them in the playoff field. So to win that many ball games in a row and end up playing for all the marbles in Nashville is just a tremendous, tremendous story and a tremendous job by that coaching staff and that football team.
Kevin, when you talk about Illinois State, I want to back up just a little bit because obviously, I mean, I didn't get a chance to watch games because James and I are covering games at the D2 level, but I saw Illinois State go to Vermillion, get an impressive 21-13 win. But at that time, for both Illinois State and South Dakota, for that matter, I thought, while a good victory for Illinois State, I still had my doubts about South Dakota. Now, the Coyotes obviously went to the quarterfinals, got beat up out there in Montana. But Illinois State, was it more about, obviously, number one, getting into the playoffs? It seemed like, you know, I was expecting them to beat Southeast Louisiana, but it seemed like all of the confidence came in that game at the Fargo Dome and pulling off that huge upset. Because after that, then I think I was totally on board with them pulling upsets on the road in their last two games and getting to that national championship.
Well, there weren't a lot of people that thought Illinois State was going to beat Southeastern Louisiana. They were plus 170 on the money line for that ball game. So thank you, Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. And look, we always have said, you know, just get in the field, and then you never know what can happen if you get hot at the right time. Well, that hasn't always been the case. We've ended up with a lot of chalk recently, haven't we, in the FCS playoffs. But this year just throws that on its end. I mean, with the portal now, with things being the way that they are, if you have a good group of guys and you develop them and they get hot at the right time, you can make a run to the national championship. You want to know how we know that? Because we've seen a team do that. And I think it just puts to shame everything about the talk up at the next level about who belongs in, who belongs out. Something like this isn't going to happen every year, right? But it can happen. It has happened. And that means probably it will happen again.
I want to ask you quick about, you'd mentioned Illinois State was a bubble team, right? Getting into the tournament. And you hear people talk at the FBS level, oh, that team shouldn't get an automatic bid in, a group of five team, for example, James Madison, because they don't belong. They earned their right to be there, though. Whereas in Division II, Division III, different regions, sometimes you get snubbed, sometimes you don't. FCS, a 24-team bracket, an unseeded team, technically the 17th-ranked team in the country, finds themselves in the national championship game. Just talk about, for a moment, the bracket, how FCS does its business, and how great it is to be able to have teams fight it out the way that they do, and sometimes it's a team that catches lightning in a bottle.
Absolutely. And I sit here and I'm thinking, look, if you win your league, you ought to be in. And there are people even in FCS circles that kind of poo-poo on that. Well, does the NEC team really, should they be taking up a playoff slot? Yes, they should. They won their league. They should be there. And you mentioned that FBS team. That James who? That name sounds familiar, but I really think just can't place them.
I would think they were familiar maybe a few years ago, but I don't know. They just kind of faded away.
I mean, once you leave FCS, you're dead to me. So, you know? So, I mean.
That was a twofer example for my spot.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but that's just how, they say that it don't be like that, but it be like that. All right. So, but this team has a very good quarterback who has an extremely short memory, and the defense how many kneecaps are there? Right? Does Brock Stack follow that family around like their last name is Manning? Right? I mean, it just seems like, there's one of those every year, it seems. And they have another one that plays on their football team. So, that's just a pipeline for Brock Stack. But when you look at what they've done and how they've done it, going on the road, being road warriors, the, nobody believes in us but us card is very well played in FCS football by a lot of people. Nobody does that better than the mustachioed gentleman there in Illinois State, that's for sure. So I'm really excited to see this ball game. And appropriately enough, Illinois State is the road team in the national championship. Isn't that just very appropriate? I don't think that bunch would have it any other way.
Yeah, they've just been an absolute blast to watch. And I'm a big fan of you can call them whatever you want, Road Warriors, the Cinderella Squad. I just love seeing somebody who comes out of the woodworks, and most people, probably everybody outside of their team facility, didn't expect them to get past the second round, or like you said, even some the first round, let alone all the way to the championship. So I love those stories. But it's a side question that I don't know what you'll even have for input in it, but from our neck of the woods, Fargo, we've seen now 4, 5, 6 starters, fringe All-American type guys that have entered the portal, which is odd because the FBS portal thing, I think it's January 2nd. At this point, you talk coast to coast with all kinds of people. This whole portal fiasco thing, how is it affecting the subdivision itself in your eyes? Because from us in Fargo, when we start seeing offensive linemen hit the portal, that seems really odd because of the amount of linemen that have been put into the NFL in recent memory.
Well, look, we won't really know the answer to that for a couple of weeks, will we? Because it seems like a lot of guys are saying they're going to enter the portal just to kind of see where they are. And, it's kind of like the guys who, in basketball, who declare for the NBA draft. And they're allowed to talk to teams and see where they might be picked in the draft. And if they don't like the information they're getting, well, they can just go right back to school. I think that the day of, if you enter the portal, you're not coming back to this school, are maybe over. And so you may see a lot of guys return. We'll see. But this is going to be a quick turnaround. You've got about 2 weeks from the time the portal opens until classes start, and you've got to be enrolled. So if you're going to enter the portal, you better do it with a plan. That's what I say.
Well, Kevin, talking about that, I mean, I know that the Missouri Valley, as an example, that's here locally, lost a number of players to the portal. I know there's been a few players, and when we've had a local Division II players commit to South Dakota State. We've seen someone else, I forget the name of the player, that has committed to NDSU to come here. Do you think maybe there was a little bit of a blueprint? Because last year, my Coyotes lost 4 very good players, and they all had very good seasons at the FBS level. And do you think that, especially when it comes to the offensive linemen at NDSU, that maybe that's a blueprint, that if they show up and they play really well, become studs at the FCS level, they're going to get those looks, and maybe they take that opportunity to not only play at the next level, maybe be able to add some coin to their pocket? In addition to that, because it seems like with the offensive linemen, which normally never seem to transfer out of NDSU, to me, I kind of wonder if the path was kind of not necessarily forged by a couple of Coyotes last year, but it sure seems an awful similar type of situation.
It does. And look, if you're offered a bag of money, it's difficult to turn it down when you know that the next play could be the last time you ever play college football.
Yep.
Guy rolls your knee. You know, anything can happen. So I don't blame the young men for taking that opportunity if it's presented to them. And it's a difficult situation for fans, it's for coaches, and even for the player. But, I mean, yesterday we saw something that I've seen a lot of things in college football, y'all. But we linemen from Oklahoma State showed what visits he was going to make in the portal. Well, he gave a date for Auburn, for Alabama, I think, and then one for Oklahoma State. And I scratched my head, and three-year Letterman said it best. He said, if you thought we have reached peak absurdity in the transfer portal era, prepare yourself for guys taking recruiting visits to schools they're already enrolled in. So man, that is the peak of the – I mean, what are you going to do? You're just going to get out of bed and walk over to the facility and say, I'm here for my visit?
I think a little bit, Kevin.
We've seen everything now.
Yeah, I think a little bit part of it is probably trying to up that potential NIL money. Maybe they weren't getting very much, and now since they played well, maybe at an all-conference level, maybe they're looking to do that. I mean, I know from being here and covering a Division II school, and I get real attached to the teams that we get a chance to cover. And I know from a personal standpoint that it's tough to watch seniors leave, let alone these transfer players leave after maybe only a season or two. We had a number of basketball players leave last year for a bigger opportunity at the Division I level. So, I mean, it's hard, I think, in a sense, for fans to really comprehend this. I understand the mentality and the reasoning by the players, especially if there's a bigger opportunity with a paycheck associated with it. But is this going to affect maybe not necessarily the fandom, because, you know, FCS fans are going to be there. That's not going away anytime soon. But is it harder for these FCS fans and even the lower level teams, lower division teams, to try and really not have their heart broke year in and year out when their best player is going to turn around and leave for greener opportunities?
Well, yes. Yes, it is. And look, when you see every school just about saying, we're going all in with revenue sharing and all in with name, image, and likeness, well, you got 12 football games. And in those 12 football games, somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose. So you're going to have teams that are all in with revenue sharing, all in with NIL, who are 4-8. And how long is that sustainable?
Mm-hmm.
Right? How long can you do that and get results that are not what you're looking for? And I don't know. John Calipari had a very, very good idea, I think, about how to fix all of this, and which is really strange because I've always looked at him as being a guy that just burns everything down, mm-hmm. right? I mean, he said everybody should get one free transfer without penalty.
Mm-hmm.
But if you hit that second transfer, then you have to sit out a year. I think that's a good idea. That could curb some of the excesses and the abuse, and that could maybe fix this problem. But yes, it's going to be difficult when you utter phrases like, man, I hope our young guys play well, but not too well.
Yeah.
Is an odd way to think about your football team, that's for sure.
Well, let's get back to the game that will be on tap this week, coming up here Monday, national championship, Montana State, Illinois State. I don't want you to get too in-depth because I don't want you to give away anything you guys are talking about on FCS Nation this week, in which airs on our airwaves on Saturday mornings. But Montana State, Illinois State, maybe look at it from a perspective. You mentioned earlier about Illinois State and where they were as a betting underdog against Southeast Louisiana. How is the Vegas population kind of looking at this, and how are you looking at it when it comes to maybe that money line, et cetera?
Illinois State can win the football game. Anybody who doesn't think so is nuts. They have a very good chance to walk away and hoist that trophy and have a national championship team. Montana State must play well. They must do things on offense that they've done all year. But Illinois State beat Villanova, and here's why. They gave up yards. Villanova moved the football, but they made them drive the field, string together 10, 11, 12 plays, and when they got into the red zone, they stiffened and made Villanova kick field goals. Montana State's going to score points. You've just got to limit that if you're Illinois State. If they get the ball inside your 20, would that defense need to stiffen up just like it did against Villanova and hold them to 3 points? And if they can do that, they're going to hang around in this ball game and have a chance to win it at the end. The offense is darn good enough to beat Montana State alone. Sobkowicz could have himself a day. Rittenhouse can get him the ball. And they have other guys in that receiving core as well, the Redbirds do. But the running game is going to be key for Illinois State. Possess the ball. Hand the ball off to your big back. Wright's going to be back this week for the national championship game for them. So they're going to have really talented running backs toting the mail. The offensive line is a veteran group for them. This is a good matchup for them. They look at what Montana was able to do on that film, and they say, wow, we can do a lot of similar things and move the ball up and down the field and have some success. And I think this is going to be a very, very good ball game. Anybody who thinks it's going to be a blowout, I don't think is really talking about anything from a place of knowledge. And they still may end up being right. But on paper, this does not look like a Montana State runaway victory or a type of ball game that you're going to flip off in the third quarter because it's going to be over. I expect this one to go down to the final gun and to be a very memorable national championship for its first time in Nashville, Tennessee.
When we go back to Montana State, James and I were broadcasting basketball that day. We were keeping an eye on that Montana State game. Obviously, it was close early. Montana had cut the lead, I believe, in early third quarter, mid-third quarter. I forget when it was. And then Montana State pulled away. From watching that game, what was the biggest difference between Montana State that game as compared to the Brawl of the Wild during the regular season that was a closely contested game that Montana State was able to pull out? Because obviously it seemed like, when you look at the score, obviously a much different story than the first time they met.
Well, Montana grabbed the lead there for a second, and they were down 20-3 and stormed back and took the lead. But the key play in that ball game was, it was 3rd and 20, and down there somewhere around the Montana State 11, 12-yard line, something like that. And Taco Dowler catches a pass and takes it all the way. And it was just, if the Grizz get off the field there, trailing by 4 points, going to get the ball somewhere around midfield, have a good amount of momentum, who knows what happens in that game. So that was a huge throw and a huge catch and run by Taco Dowler, maybe the biggest in the history of Montana State football ever. And that's saying something. So, it was a very good ball game. The score was not indicative of how that game was played most of the way. But, I went back and looked, and the attendance in 1984 for the Montana State National Championship game win was 9,521. And myself, my father, my mother, my sister, and like 7 of our neighbors all went to that ball game because it was at Johnson Haygood Stadium, a.k.a. the General, on the campus of the Citadel in Charleston, South Carolina. I was 9 years old. And so there were 9,500 people there. There'll be more people at this national championship game, but I wonder how many people are going to be in that stadium who have seen Montana State win a championship before with their own two eyes. And it's really kind of cool in how small of a world it is that your friend Kevin Marshall will be one of those who can say that. Isn't that really strange?
Right? It is.
I think that would be true, right? And that is the first time I think I can remember that I ever heard of Montana, and now I live there. Man, life is really strange.
That's why you moved there, right? Because of trying to be near that national championship
fond
game.
Fond childhood memories is what it is.
I wanted to be near some college football success of some kind. Thanks, Jake.
You're welcome.
That was really like a left-handed compliment right to the testicle.
not just a quick drive somewhere, but a couple hours of flight and a connection somewhere. Then you're in successful football territory. Golly,
right.
What a way to pump you up there entering the championship. In closing, Kevin, a two-parter for you. I want you to preview FCS Nation as always. That'll air on our airwaves at 8 a.m. on Saturday morning. But also, what you're most excited for with the new venue of the national championship being in Nashville this year.
Well, we're going to preview the game, obviously. and we're going to have some serious boots on the ground there in Nashville. 9 sets of boots, to be exact. We're going to cover the game from all angles. So watch our Twitter, at FCS Nation Radio 1, and our website, FCSNationRadio.com, for all the coverage of the national title game. I'm excited to be in Nashville. And there are some people that are like, well, Nashville won't even notice the game is there. Well, okay. You know, that's okay. But to see the game in a brand new renovated football stadium, not a soccer stadium in a suburb, and just the different entertainment options that are going to be available to people, you know, and all of it is generally in one place. So you don't have a $50 Uber ride 4 times a night while you're in Nashville, unless you're staying way out. So I'm excited about it. I know that the people there that are putting the game on in Nashville are committed to this. They would really like to see this game never go back to Frisco and to stay in Nashville. They want to host a Super Bowl there. And in their mind, the first step to doing that is putting on a really first-class event for the FCS National Championship game. Those two things are not similar. Hosting the FCS Championship game and hosting the Super Bowl are very different things, but they have an opportunity to prove that they can put on an event that they planned for, that they had the time to make into a first-class event, and this is a step on that road for them, and I'm excited about it. And look, it's really strange to not have a Dakota taking part in the national championship and the lead up to it and seeing their colors around a town when somebody's playing for the title. Some people might call it refreshing. I am one of those. I think everybody kind of knows that, right? But this is good for the subdivision. I know that North Dakota State people probably don't like to hear that, but it is. We needed some new blood. We needed some people to show everyone that there are more teams in the FCS, except for those that reside in the Dakotas. And look, if Illinois State can somehow win this game, I mean, that's the definition of improbable and the definition of why we have a playoff system that we have. And I would surely like to see that type of thing rewarded.